You are listening to episode 119 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. On a scale from 1 to 10, Google products are okay. All right, man. What's going on with Microsoft? What's their problem?
Oh, dude, it's awful. Basically, they're having like an exodus of employees. It's kind of crazy right now.
Really?
Yeah, it's not just employees, sorry, but executives in more importantly, and they are like, people are either leaving or getting fired in mass. If you were involved with Windows 8,
and rightly so.
Yeah, and it's like
I just had another friend who installed Windows 8. He got a new laptop and it has Windows 8. He's like, "This is the most frustrating thing I've ever used." Because I don't get it.
I couldn't believe it. I was at our parents' house this evening actually, and it was my first time actually sitting down in a Windows 8.1 computer.
Oh yeah.
Sat down, and I went, "How do I get to the desktop? I don't know how to get to the desktop anymore." And my mom was like, "Oh, you just go over here and you click on this." And I was like, "I can't." I realized that they tried to fix it and make it better by going to 8.1. Was supposed to be the savior of it, but
yeah.
They changed enough of the UI that I was like, "Okay, what do I do now?" I actually learned 8.0 and you went and changed it on me enough where it went, you know, like, whatever. I guess I had to do that. But basically, so two of the dudes that like were most responsible for revamping Vista into Windows 7, John Devan and Grant George, they left the company earlier this week. Yay! Julie Larson Green and Jensen Harris, whom may blame or credit with the Office ribbon on Windows Tinker toy tiles, have found new homes buried deep in corporate nowhere land.
I originally thought the ribbons were pretty dumb, but I don't know. They're okay. They're okay.
Yeah. I
would say they are better than the old menu system.
But the important part here is that the people that are responsible for them are no longer there.
Yeah,
so if
yeah,
you like them, they've left. It's too bad. You know, that.
All right.
And it's funny. You know, a lot of people hated the ribbons because they were new. And one of the things that Microsoft does a terrible job with is transitioning, people.
Oh, my gosh. There is no transition.
Well, there is no
transition. Figure it out.
Yeah, and it's the whole idea of intuitive versus familiar, and a lot of people confuse the two. And they said the ribbons aren't intuitive. And like, it's not that they're not intuitive, it's that they're not familiar. They're not any more intuitive or less intuitive than the last version, just the last version was familiar. Whereas like the whole reason why you put transitions in, like, you know, and do all that graphically intense stuff is because that makes it intuitive. And that being besides the point, you're losing a bunch of execs.
Yeah.
Steve Sinofsky, who is one of the former Windows chief, he's gone. Antoine LeBond, of the original Office 95 to 2007, Windows 7, 8, Inner Circle, he's gone. And basically what they're going through is this like big list of of people who are like were important to the company, important to these products, and they've all left. I thought this was interesting. Who is this? His Devan was Sinofsky's boss for many years. Most telling is this reminiscence from Sinofsky's as told in Geek Wire. Back in the early 1990s, the use of garbage collection was more theoretical than practical. It is used broadly today in .NET scripting languages, but I was really into it having just come from graduate school. I went to see John and convince him of the virtues of using garbage collection in Excel, and we explored using it first in C++ tools. He was open-minded and then patiently showed me the tiny number of bugs in Excel that were rooted in memory management problems, and also showed me just how memory efficient Excel was all due to the amazing coding engineering the team did. And once I learned the limits of theory, the practical engineering John exhibited, as well as his patience and openness to the ideas from the new guy, and you know, just talking about talking about this dude who was really important to what was going on at Microsoft, because he's not just he doesn't just understand the new stuff, but he understands the practicality of the engineering, what they've done, and why that's all important. I mean, that's, you know, it's like, you know, good engineering is incredibly valuable. And one of the things that I've always said about Microsoft is that, you know, they've got bad managers but great engineers. They got really, really great data scientists, computer scientists, great engineers, and you know, they come out with these really amazing products that just don't really find their way, you know, into usability, or they're thrust upon the population or forced upon it, and it's just uncomfortable. And it's like, their problem isn't bad products, it's in bad engineering, it's bad everything else currently. And basically what's happening is all the great engineers are leaving. And you're like, oh, this is this is not good. It's not good for Microsoft at all. And on top of that, what's fascinating is another article that I read that kind of talking about Windows 8.1 in 2014. Basically, what they said was the long and short of this article is, as you know, trying to figure out like what's the problem with Windows 8.1. Why isn't it being uptake? Especially because there's a strong fan base, just like there was for Vista. But you know, people arguing that, you know, once you get used to it, it's actually pretty awesome. It's got a lot of new intuitive, or it's got a lot of new features that are great and really useful and worth the time. So why isn't it catching on? And this guy says, well, there's a really it's not about different feature sets. It's not about how you market it. It's the fundamental issue of, you know, Microsoft wanted to build a operating system that was both a tablet, good for tablets, good for desktops. It was everything that everybody needed. It wasn't just quote unquote a toy. It allowed you to play and to work, just like all Windows. And basically what this guy is arguing, and I tend to agree with this, is that people are realizing they don't need the complexity of a full-blown operating system. You know, and he goes, it's just one of those things where people are sitting there going, you know, I don't need all of Windows. It's the reason why the Chromebooks are taking off. It's the reason why people rely more and more on their smartphones. It's the reason why the iPads sell as well as they do. It's because people just don't need a full-blown operating system. And it's funny. It's like I have to remind myself to sit down at my Mac, especially now that I have the Apple TV. Oh, my goodness. I have to remind myself to sit down on my Mac and produce, because that is the absolutely only thing that I do on my Mac. I don't goof around on my Mac at all. It is a work tool.
Work tool, huh? I know. You should think about investing in some capital there to really get some work done.
I know. So I can get it done quickly.
Yeah.
I can't afford $1,500 for Google Glass, but I can definitely afford the $4,500 for the model.
That's why banks invented personal loans and credit cards.
You know, don't tempt me, James. Don't tempt me. I'm in a goofy mood.
So I've been working on this finance class way too long, and I have this cool section actually where I talk about the history of the credit card and how it all happened. It's actually a relatively recent invention, but anyways, it's cool little credit cards, man.
I know, man. It's great. This stuff.
What was that line in The Matrix? You know, where that guy? I think it was was it Reloaded? Where he's like quintessentially your best attribute and your worst.
Hope is the quintessential human emotion. It's the source of your greatest strength and your biggest weakness.
Yeah. It's kind of like that.
Yeah. I get it. But not hope, credit. You see, the problem is that credit just like turns on. Credit lights up the same neurons in me that sugar does. Where it's like, I have one cookie, and then I have another 37 cookies. I can go weeks without a cookie. I have that first cookie, and I can't stop. Rest of the day is done. It's whatever. You know, and same with credit, man. You give me a credit card, I survive without a credit card just fine. No problem. Never need one. Never use one because I don't have one. You give me one, I will spend every cent on it before the end of the month and be like, I don't have money for this. Why did I do that? That was stupid. I don't know what to do now. It's awful. There's something wrong with my brain. That being said,
credit cards can be good, man. I've got like 40,000 points right now on my rewards card. I don't know what to do with it.
You know, that's great. We are not talking about credit right now. We are talking about OS X and Windows. But that, I guess that's the bigger point here, right? I know. Well, I guess that's the bigger point here is that I think OS X suffers from the same problems that Windows does, except OS X has always positioned itself as an expensive tool and more of a capital investment in something that's going to last longer. And so I think the reason why you don't see the same dramatic, you know, plunge off the sales cliff that you're seeing in, you know, if as much of a, you know, it's not like a hard, you know, they still sell a ton of Windows machines. But the reason why you're seeing the, you know, sales decline the way they are, and you're not seeing the same dramatic decline in OS X, is just the nature of the type of, you know, Macs that you sell. But it's the same fundamental issue of we don't need full-blown operating systems anymore. It's just not necessary for most people most of the time. And so, you know, or if you need it, you're going to buy it once and you're just going to hold on to it for, you know, a long time. And then the best part about it is that you build Chrome and Google wants Chrome to work just as well on your, you know, on your PC as it does on a Chromebook, as it does on Android. So, you know, if most of my goofing off time is spent on Chrome, you know, and then the only time that you really need, you know, a high-powered computer for is for playing video games. You know, like, go buy an Xbox, you know, One or PlayStation 4 or a Steam machine. And so this all comes back to, you know, Microsoft is having, like, they're getting hit on two fronts right now. It's like they're suffering from a serious dramatic brain drain, and a real brain drain, and at the same time, like, their flagship product is suffering from just a lack of apathy. It's not that it's bad or good. It doesn't matter. It's just not necessary, which
yeah, that could be a problem.
Is a different thing and bad in a really troublesome way. You know, and it's funny.
Important question is, do you think that they can recover? Do you think this new CEO can come in, whoever it is, can come in and right the ship?
I think they have a product that actually could really help save them already selling in Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8. I think it's a good product, and I think that they just need to realize that that is what RT should have been, and that's what most Surfaces should be running, is some blown-up version of Windows Phone 8, Windows Mobile 8, you know? Mm. Call it something good. Come up with a better name, man. They come up with as good a name as HP. But, you know.
Dude, the Slate, man. That's a cool name.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's funny, you know, it's like, I make fun of Windows Mobile 8, but, you know, Apple's not necessarily any better. The iPad mini with Retina display, 64 gigs Wi-Fi only, is the title of the product that I would buy today if I were going to go and buy one. You know, it's like ridiculous. So, you know, I don't know. But that's where they're at.
All right.
Bad news, man.
And so then, it sounds like 4K is the future, huh?
Heck yeah. So Google announced on day after New Year's, appropriate use of apostrophes, on Thursday, that they are going to be doing – they're going to be streaming 4K through YouTube, which is awesome. More credibility to the fact that this is the year of 4K. And everybody's going to be making a big deal about it. Of course, Google wants to use their proprietary their open source proprietary codec, the codec that they make,
yeah.
VP9. And unlike VP8, where, it was competing against the one that Apple was behind, which was H.264, whatever it was.
254 or something.
Yeah. That one, and they lost hardcore. VP8 got very little adoption. Google's out early with VP9 because it supports 4K, and they got a bunch of hardware partners that are going to do hardware acceleration to run VP9, which at 4K is kind of necessary. Most TVs and stuff don't, or monitors, you know, if there's not hardware acceleration, they don't run fast enough to do the decompression in a virtual machine. So it's important.
I saw on Lifehacker, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? They had a 4K television, or they were talking about a 4K television that was on sale on Amazon, and it was only $2,500.
What?
And they're like, yeah, it's a crazy deal, man. Check it out. Yeah, I was like, wow, that's
ridiculous.
Yeah, and it was 4K.
Samsung.
You could buy a really nice. It was like a 60-inch, HD television for $900. But
yeah, man, which that's crazy.
That one, I mean, it was like Samsung, you know, like normal name brand stuff, not some off brand.
Dude, those operative. AOC, man, that's the way to go, dude. They're awesome. They make.
What does that stand for? Is that a company?
It's a company, yeah. But they do the panels for like a bunch of different companies. They're kind of like Panasonic in that they make just the LCD panels, and then occasionally they make their own model of like actual branded monitor, and they're super cheap because they make the panels themselves. But they're good. I like them. I have an AOC and an LG. But what was I going to say about this? Dude, Samsung, they just announced they've got an Ultra HD, which I think is 4K, but they call it Ultra HD TV, 110 inches.
Wow.
Yeah. I want one like crazy. Except this one's a little bit outside of my price range, unlike the Mac Pro. This one costs $150,000.
That's it, huh?
Mostly being sold to like your Arabian sheiks, your oil barons of the Middle East. Because it costs
$150,000. Why would you ever pay that? I know that, but why would anybody ever buy it? This just doesn't make any sense to me.
Because you're one of the top 10 richest men in the world, and
but I'd like to think that you became one of those men by being smart with your money.
No, they didn't. They're oil barons. They're princes and
sheiks.
Kings.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, I mean they're literally born into royalty, so they have the rights.
They
to
are paying
the energy.
Samsung's R&D. Good job.
That's precisely what it is, actually. Yeah, they're the guys that it's crazy when you talk about like the super rich, because obviously like Bill Gates, what's the one dude, the one Mexican dude's name?
Carlos Slim.
Yeah, Carlos Slim.
He's actually super frugal, by the way.
I believe it. Well,
he's lived in the same 4-bedroom house for the last 30 years.
That's awesome. Warren
Buffett.
Yeah, Warren Buffett. So like your top like 3 billionaires, they always talk about how like rich they are, the 3 richest men on earth. The only reason they're the 3 richest men on earth is because they disclose what they actually own. There's at least 100 guys way more wealthy, insanely wealthier than them, because they basically own like entire oil fields, and they just don't disclose how much money they have because they're, you know, they're kings and princes of countries, and for geopolitical reasons, and you know,
I've never actually thought
political.
About that.
Yeah, they're insanely rich. They're like where Bill Gates is like, you know, 60 billions. They're like 500 billion. They're approaching trillionaires.
Would think that would be mentioned somewhere but maybe not.
Every once in a while it comes up. It's like Mubarak. Mubarak was way richer than Bill Gates when you actually took all of his assets together. But they just, you know, it's hard to really figure out what his assets are, you know. As the dictator of Egypt. It's like, what are you supposed to do? So, yeah, those are the guys that buy those kinds of products, not Bill Gates. But, yeah, good times.
So I'm going to go first.
Go for it.
you can wrap it up. I just want to apologize.
It's too late to apologize.
I want to apologize on behalf of Evan Spiegel, because he refuses to.
Okay.
Evan Spiegel, the $3 billion boy. Remember him?
Yeah.
He is the CEO of Snapchat. This guy who the news was that a whole bunch of phone numbers and usernames got stolen because there was some sort of issue with their security, and they were warned about it, and they totally ignored them, and then essentially were like, you know, you didn't listen, so we're going to post it online or part of the numbers, whatever. You could go online and you could look up your own number or your name or something like that. I don't remember. I didn't do it.
I did.
And
all you could do is
you
could
see if were you on there?
You could see if your number was available. Nope, mine wasn't.
Good job. I know our dad, where like Snapchat is like the first social network he's ever signed up for, was super concerned. He was like, not only did he email the article, but he like called me too. I was like, "Is this okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's fine."
Yeah. What are they gonna do with your phone number?
But we part of it, right? That's it too. But this kind of feeds back, I mean, perfectly with what we were talking about, where it was like, are they mature enough to handle it? He did this interview. I want to see if I can play it. Hopefully it'll actually not buffer. We'll see here. It might, because I know I'm rocking high speeds right now. Whoops. No, actually play.
Come on. Get it together.
Come on. Oh, it may not. Oh, wait. Here we go.
An anonymous hacker or group of hackers posted the personal information on a website called SnapchatDB that has since been taken down. Now Spiegel is trying to reassure Snapchat's users who, according to the company, send 350 million images a day.
Medical or technology businesses in general are susceptible to hacking, and that's why you have to work really, really, really hard, you know, with law enforcement, with security experts, you know, internal and external groups to make sure you're paying attention and, you know, addressing security concerns.
But Spiegel played down the fact that Snapchat had been warned by a security firm that the site was vulnerable just days before the hack.
You know, I believe, you know, at the time we thought we had done enough. But I think in a business like this, in a business that's moving so quickly, if you spend your time looking backwards, you're just going to kill yourself.
Spiegel also points out that no pictures or videos were compromised.
The key is striking a balance, you know, between providing the utility of a friend service and preventing abuse.
And there you go. Yeah, just doesn't really want to apologize for it. And, I mean, it's just, I honestly listen to that and I watch him and I just kind of want to slap him. I'd be like, really? That's your answer? Come on. You know,
I love that.
Companies.
You know what my favorite part about that, honestly, and this is, I'm you know, piggyback on what you're saying, was the, you know, if you spend time looking back, you'll just want to, you know, kill yourself. Yeah, that is why we're angry. It's because we're looking back to yesterday, to when you compromised all of our data, you jerk.
Yeah, no, it really is.
I hate to be this way. I mean, I hate to be this way, and I hate to keep, you know, coming back to this, but it's Facebook has never had this problem. You know,
well, Facebook has done stuff, and I mean, it was funny. They've actually said, this was actually in Gawker, you know, Valley Wag, but they were like, dude, it's totally okay to say I'm sorry. Like, do you know how many times Mark Zuckerberg has had to admit that he's messed up with something on Facebook? Like, it's okay. And then they give a little bit more of his quote. And then they sit there and say, you know what? Here's what needs to happen. Either one, Snapchat CEO Evan Spiegel must be fired. Or two, Snapchat CEO Evan Spiegel must fire whoever is advising him not to apologize for this mess. And then they're like, the first absolutely won't happen, and number two won't solve the real problem. Evan Spiegel, you go, it's one thing to play steely sociopath with your best friend during a deposition, but you can't treat millions of app users like some frat friend you messed over at Stanford. And, you know, it's like, dude, it's so true. Which, by the way, on the sociopath one, there's a link to his deposition video.
Yeah.
And it's this guy. I would play it, but it's like 5 minutes long, and 4 minutes and 30 seconds of it is silence. And
go to furloughrose.com and check it out.
Yeah. But it's this the guy asks him – he asks him some question about it, and then he asks him, do you have any regrets in how you handled the situation with your roommate, essentially?
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, like, I kid you not, there's like a 2 minute pause of him like thinking of his answer, you know? I mean, you're just like, wait, are you seriously? Just, you know, it reeks of liar so bad. Like, okay, wait, let me come up with my answer real quick. It's horrible. But ultimately he's like, you know what I regret? I regret opening up my home to him. I regret giving him food and letting him work on this amazing project. That's what I regret doing. I know. Like, oh. And it was funny. The interviewer goes, really? Is that your answer for reals?
And this is against the dude who actually came up with the ghost, like, drawing, right?
Yeah. I mean, who at first they played off as, oh no, he was never a part of it. He never lived in our house, to which all of the emails said completely opposite.
It's ludicrous. It's absolutely, I mean, the dude is a train wreck. I mean, and this is the biggest problem that they run into, is that it's, you know, it was an engineering issue. It was a, you know, the security firm came to them and said, you have a problem with your database. Fix it. We'll give you a couple of days to fix it. It needs to be fixed right now before anybody else finds it. And because what they want, because the security firm is like, you either get credit for finding it and fixing it, or somebody else does. And that's what they're like. You know, they're fighting against the clock. So they're going, we'll give you enough time to deal with it, and then we're taking credit for it. Because that's where their value proposition is. And basically, you know, the guys at Snapchat didn't fix it. You're like, what the heck were you doing? Like, either you decided that it wasn't a valuable enough target and it was fine that you didn't fix it, or you didn't know how to fix it. And the thing is that I keep coming back with Snapchat, I don't think they have a good enough technology team there. They just, every time you see like little flaws open up and more when security teams pull apart Snapchat, you just like, really? That was your guys' solution to this problem? You know, I don't know. They do not strike me as a company that had anything but one really lucky idea and one brilliant idea that they stumbled upon completely on accident. And they probably beat the one guy out that actually understood why it was a brilliant idea. You know,
I'll be honest, man. There is a part of me that just wants to watch this thing completely implode on itself.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, to have just that classic, they passed on $3 billion for an app, like you said, that has bugs, has a lot of improvements. They probably don't have another thing inside of them. They definitely don't have a revenue model yet. And they passed on it. And I could totally see it where they implode. And I would still be upset if they got bought for like $100 million. But I, you know what I mean? I just love it to be like, no, sorry, you had your opportunity and you missed it. The world is moved on. There's a part of me that would just love to watch that. And it's purely because of leadership, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You just put that in contrast with Google, right? Where you had these two engineers who were brilliant by all measures, and, you know, which is different in this situation, and smart enough to realize that they weren't ready to run a company.
Yep.
And to actually listen to advisors and to bring in somebody who, you know, knew what they were doing. They tried to sell their algorithm and their, you know, what they came up with before, and then no one wanted to buy it, right? I mean, a totally different situation, but It's just something where you look at it and go, look, these are smart guys. They get it. And yeah, they were going to be a success. It was just, was it Google search? Was it something else? You know, who knows? And, you know, and that's why you look at what they're doing with Google Glass and you go, yeah, they're going to be a success. That's just, that's how they work. They're smart. They figured out they put themselves in a position to be successful. And you're going to watch the same thing with the driverless cars and a whole bunch of other things that they're working on. You know, they just, it just huge contrast. Huge contrast.
And you shrug your shoulders, it's Beagle. And he's just like, I bet if you were to talk to him, he thinks he's smarter than all of them.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And it's a shame because he gets people like us where we root against him.
Yeah.
You know, and the second you run into a problem, we're not going to give him excuses. And I think this way, the service isn't that great where I'm going to stick it out no matter what.
It's funny. I feel myself slowing down with Snapchat. I still get snaps from people, and I watch them and I appreciate them. They're cool, but I don't send out snaps anymore, and not for any particular reason. It's just whatever. It's fine. It's cool. But I don't think about it. I already run into the permanence issue of I get why the non-permanence is cool, but it's like. Anything that actually this is what I love. I love these. When you get a really cool picture from somebody, a really cool snap, and you're like, that is really cool. And then I flip over to Instagram to see what's going on Instagram, and they posted the exact same picture to Instagram.
It's like, I think I did that recently.
Perfect.
Actually.
Exactly. Yeah, and you just sit there and you go, that's...
Well, so I'll be honest. What happened with that one, so like I did the pizza because that was awesome.
Yeah.
It tasted amazing. The only reason why I went to Snapchat was because of our dad.
Yep.
Because I was like, dude, I want this around forever because it's amazing. Everyone else on my family is on Instagram, but I know that he would want to see it and would appreciate it. Normally, I would just text it to him, but what the heck, I'll Snapchat it over.
But I see a lot of people making the – and so basically what you're left with, the only thing that you're left with Snapchat – is like, you know, really, really trivial pictures and playing with people, you know, just like goofing off with people and texting back and forth in a chatty sort of way, which, you know, I don't have any reason to suspect that Snapchat has any permanence over, I don't know, texting or whatever the next, you know, service is that.
It was like that other one we talked about, right? Where we're talking about the context, right? Where you can fill up the screen with a picture and text as much and put as much text as you want. No limit. Don't worry about it.
Right. And there's the whole feedback thing of I can't give any feedback to people on Snapchat without committing to a complete other snap where all I'm being like, that's really cool. Which is just stupid. Like, I just can't. Like, I used to do that. I was just like, this is so dumb. I can't do it anymore. And I realized that, like, I'm not necessarily the greatest thermometer for what's cool and what's useful. But when I really try to – when I watch – what I do really try to do is watch my friends' usage. And I don't think Instagram's got anything going for it. I don't think it has legs at all. And from the top of the company to the product they're offering, it's a really clever idea. It really is. And I think somebody will buy it, but I think it's way better as part of another service. I think it's way better as part of Instagram and not its own app. And that's what it comes down to. You know, I just don't part of Twitter, part of Vine, part of something else. It just doesn't make sense on its own as this own like thing. And the simple fact of the matter is it's like, well, I wanted last week to talk about an article about the idea of the impermanent internet. You know, the internet up to this point has been really awesome because it's permanent. You know, it's like, you know, you've got these huge histories and these huge databases and all this stuff. And Instagram is that first, like, you know, real product where we're like, it's the exact opposite. It's impermanent. And it's exciting because it's impermanent. but not really, because it's still stored on your phone, and although you don't have access to it, a lot of people have access to it, because you know, it's like you sit there and you go, what do we hate about Facebook and our whole privacy thing? It's that it's not that it's permanent for us, it's that it's permanent for somebody. And so, with Snapchat, the pictures are not permanent for us, but they're permanent for everybody that has any access to, you know, the file hierarchy of any phone that you sent it to. And if you sent it to somebody with an Android phone, you can get it just from a PC. You just go into the file hierarchy, you know, you plug it in and you can look for it. You can find it. Super easy. They're there. You just change the file extension name and you can open up the pictures again. You know, and so it's like even the one thing that it actually offers that's uniquely culturally different, even that isn't real. And it's just smoke and mirrors. And I shrug my shoulders and I go, like, it offers nothing that's real or new. And a lot of that is the fault of their engineers and their developers. But I don't know. The more and more I go, the more and more I'm just like, obviously my attitude towards Snapchat is souring at a relatively quick pace.
Yeah, seriously.
And it's like, although my information wasn't compromised, it makes me pretty nervous about it, that my information's there. Because I have no reason to suspect that they haven't done something incredibly retarded, like, you know, storing all of your passwords in simple text, you know, that, you know, or in plain text, I mean, you know, why would they do any sort of, you know, I guess they probably have enough people that have actually, like, gone through and said, you can't store this in plain text. You have to do this as, you know, encrypted. But, you know, Reddit got hit by that after being around for, like, 4 years, and they were still storing everything in plain text. You're like, you guys have got, like, 100 million users. How can you possibly be doing that? But I don't know. I just don't know.
By the way, we had a comment here from Christy E.
What's up, Christy E?
Decided to give a friendly reminder that you can actually send private pictures to Instagram now.
It's true. So, they just don't delete themselves automatically. And then it's funny, I haven't actually done it yet.
I think I sent you one when it first came out.
Yeah. You want to know why I don't do it? And it's simple. There's this other really cool app that I discovered. It's called texting. And I just don't, you know, and that was not a jab at you, Christy. That was a jab at Instagram. It's just a text message in Instagram, which is fine. There's no reason to not have that feature, but there's also no reason to use that feature. You know, the only thing that, like I said, the only thing that Snapchat added was that the picture automatically deletes itself, but it doesn't, you know, and that's what irritates me about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. Let's bring it home.
All right. I got one more.
It's your story.
Oh, yeah. So,
awkward silence.
Sorry. Woo. That's all right. It's all the way at the top. So the NSA has hacked into your iPhone and got all your photos. And
what are you doing? Oh, I thought you were going to do the AT&T one.
Oh.
All right, you get one more, so choose. Choose.
The NSA one's kind of – okay, the NSA one's – the reason I'm not going to do the NSA one is because – basically what they do is they've got a backdoor to they figured out a backdoors to the iPhone, and they claim that this is the big thing. They basically have claimed that they've never been able to – they've never had an iPhone.
Wait, you are doing this one or not doing it?
Give me a second. They've never had an iPhone that they couldn't compromise, but they had to have it, like, physically, like, have it. And basically every computer – like, I had this, like, big thing about, like, what it meant, what it probably was. And then a bunch of computer scientists came on and, like, dude, you can compromise any computer that you have in your possession. That's nothing, not a big deal. That's why it's not a big deal. But the AT&T T-Mobile one, basically AT&T, they're saying if you're on T-Mobile right now, you got your phone, you got your month-to-month contract thing, and you're loving it, but you want to get over to a real network like AT&T, you just can't justify it because it costs too much. $450 coming your way if you switch over to AT&T.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of bones, man. You know, that's a couple of months worth of bills for your contracts and whatnot. And I didn't really get too much into the context of this deal because I am not on T-Mobile and it doesn't really affect me. But basically it's the deal offers converts a minimum of 200 once they've subscribed to a smartphone plan, plus up to 250 more if they trade in an existing phone. There's no much mention of when the promo will end, although it's described as a limited time offer. So basically what's going on, T-Mobile is doing some serious damage. It's pretty awesome. You know, they're actually getting people to switch over and AT&T's having to react. Creative destruction of capitalism and free markets. Woohoo. Basically AT&T T-Mobile is pretty the T-Mobile CEO. Thanks for liking my Instagram photo, James. My ringer was on.
I sent you one.
Oh, did you? You sent me one.
I was testing the direct message to see if it disappeared or not. It doesn't.
That's cool. It doesn't. You know what I love about that? It tells you everybody that you sent.
I saw your photo.
That's cool. But you know what's really cool? One of the really cool things about it is it will tell you everybody you sent it to, just like a text message. And like there were like early on, there was posts of somebody who was like, he sent a direct message to his girl. I was like, good night, baby. I love you so much. But he sent it to all of his girlfriends and all of them could see all of them. Like, ooh, you're in trouble. So be aware if you're cheating on girls. Or get caught. I don't care. I don't like you. So the T-Mobile CEO slams AT&T for trying to buy back customers. Basically, he's saying that this is like sort of looks like Loki from Thor, which is pretty awesome because he's like AT&T must truly be desperate to be turning to this. Quoted. Was, you know, basically quoting Loki. I don't think he did it on purpose either. That's the best part. But basically he's saying that, like, they know AT&T's – or T-Mobile's doing well. They're getting all sorts of customers. He's predicting AT&T had a terrible Q4, and they're going to get desperate. And then on top of it, the move is believed to be a preemptive strike ahead of T-Mobile's fourth Un-carrier announcement, which is coming next week at CES 2014 and is believed to include an offer to reimburse contract termination fees for customers who switch from another carrier to T-Mobile, which, James, just saying. That's a sweet enough deal. We need to seriously talk.
Oh, man.
My problem
is right now with five of us on AT&T, it's actually competitive rate-wise with other offerings.
Yeah.
If you guys start leaving me, that's where it won't make sense anymore.
See, my problem is I get unlimited LTE if I go over to
them. I know. I get it. You should do it. As your brother and friend, you should do it. Especially if they're going to reimburse you, that would be pretty darn awesome.
Yeah, because what would basically happen. This is my fourth iPhone.
You always
in the last 13 months.
One.
My fourth one.
Wow, you're amazing at holding on to those.
I know it is actually kind of amazing, and Apple keeps giving me new ones. So like the first one I dropped.
Do you have Apple Care Plus?
Oh heck yeah.
Okay.
I knew I needed it. The first one broke when I dropped it. The second one broke when I dropped it in a vat of it took a bath in antifreeze. So the third one, which I got replaced today, manufacturing defect, the plug. The plugs are supposed to be switchable, so you can switch them left and right. It would only work one way, which is really weird. I couldn't figure out why. And then, and certain plugs, like the plug for my car charger wouldn't work, and I couldn't figure out why.
That's frustrating.
It's really frustrating. So I took it into the Apple store like a week ago, and they were like, I think it just had like some junk in there. So they pulled it out, seemed to work fine while I was in the store. I took it back home, wasn't working. So this time I actually took all my chargers and plugs and everything. I was like, look, guys, we're checking if it, like, I'm telling you it doesn't work. The dude took one look in the port and goes, well, you're missing your second pin, so that might be a problem. And I was like, whoa, that's probably is the problem. So yeah, so they gave me a new one. I say all that to say I have a brand new battery and I am ready to use and abuse it. Let me get some unlimited LTE. That'd be awesome. Oh my goodness. Streaming Netflix anywhere, anytime. Oh man. I could wreck this phone in a serious way. Kind of stoked. The batteries are supposed to last for 2 years.
T-Mobile, huh?
Yeah. It'd be awesome.
What is that monthly rate? Do you know it off the top of your head?
If it's $70 for unlimited okay. LTE. And you know what the other awesome part about it would be? And this actually is like as big a selling point as anything. That's unlimited LTE with tethering, which would mean my iPad all of a sudden, my iPad all of a sudden becomes like really valuable because I can use it
seriously
anywhere, anytime. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I know. It's a great deal. It's actually, and the best part about it is I'm paying $70 a month right now. Now, granted,
yeah.
You know, because of stuff, I realize it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't pan out perfectly for me, but it would be like $15 more a month. And, like, I don't know. It seems like a really stupid decision that I'm willing to make. So, I don't know.
For tethering, that's huge. Well,
I know. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Unlimited tethering. Oh my gosh, I would wreck their entire network. It'd just be like, why don't you ever stop, you know, streaming stuff? Like, you're not. I know you're asleep. Why are you still doing this?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, we have. So I've got CenturyLink internet for home, right? And we don't have a telephone. We don't do cable, stuff like that. And I totally keep toying around with the idea of just like, dude, what if we just went all mobile? What would that look like? You know, And I mean, because we've got 3G, we've got 4G here, I think, or LTE or something like that. It depends, but you know, I'm like, man, the speeds would actually be pretty good. We could run this podcast totally over that network. But that might be the kind of thing where if I drop that altogether, save myself, you know, whatever it is, $50 a month.
Lo siento, not unlimited tethering, 2.5 gigs.
All right.
That 2.5 gigs is pretty good for me, but
it's, oh yeah, you know. Yeah. If you were using it for tethering on the, you know, occasion with your iPad, yeah.
Right.
If for what I was talking about, that would not work.
Right.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
Yeah, which I think is the reason why they do it that way, because, you know, that's
yeah. Then I guess I would be doing work stuff, and sometimes I pull down 2 gigs in, you know, however long it takes me to pull down 2 gigs.
Right, exactly.
But, okay, all right. Huh, interesting, though. So they're getting after each other and going after pocketbooks.
Yeah, I love it. And I bet, and the best part about it is that T-Mobile is getting aggressive with service and pricing, and AT&T is getting aggressive with gimmicks, which, you know, a long term.
We're currently on team AT&T. So
well, I mean,
we're gonna be a little careful there.
Define on team. I mean,
well, we pay for their service. In the sense that you're on Apple's team right now.
I'm not on that. That's totally different. I'm an advocate for.
I gotcha. I understand. You know. You hinted at it, but next week is CES.
I know, so I'm super stoked.
We will be talking a lot about that next week. And then the following week, Matthew will have a special guest on because I will be the happiest place on earth. And I'll be doing that.
I think that's technically Disneyland. I think Disney World comes in second, yeah.
Are you sure about that?
I'm not, but I was always under the impression that Disney World is just sort of maybe Disney properties are just, I don't know.
Whatever. I'll be in Florida where it's warm. Yeah. It was super cold today. It was bad. It was freezing out. But that's what'll be going on. So as I quickly pull up everything so we're gonna close it out for this week. Talked about a bunch of stuff. And like I said, next week will be mostly CES stuff, I think, other than the Apple story that Matthew manages to sneak in there. And then, I'm going to keep learning about Android and what that means and tablets, and that'll be cool. And, so we'll have, more stories than we know how to keep up with, but that's always fun, too. So, everybody, thanks for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my resolute brother is Matthew Furlow, and so we will talk next time. So my phone is actually set up so that it does a do not disturb from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And, which is nice because it means halfway through this podcast, nothing gets through. Except, and this is the weird part, even if I have do not disturb on my phone, I will still get notifications on my watch. Doesn't stop that.
That's annoying.
Yeah. So, middle of the night, get a text message or, something, buzz. Oh, great. Awesome. I would kind of like that to be not disturbing.
Yeah, come on, well, guys.
That's the way it works. It'll get there. Apparently, Pebble is making some announcement at CES on Monday, so I'm excited to read what that is. Who knows? Developer API stuff. Yay! Yeah, really make me jealous then. No! I got an old model.